The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Hooten, Judge Johnson, Judge Sleater, the Honorable Judge Carol A. Hooten presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The matter that is before us this morning is the case of Stephen Bystad versus City of Duluth. The file number is A20-1170. Counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your oral argument. The appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Before you begin your oral argument, please introduce yourself and identify your client. With that being said, we may now proceed with the appellant. And also, please put your mute button on when you are not arguing. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Now that we're in the age of Zoom, I start these a little bit differently. I always make sure to see if everyone can, first of all, see me and hear me all right. All right. And if for whatever reason during the course of my 15 minutes, if technology fails, just please try to give me a high sign and tell me you're having problems. With that said, Your Honors, good morning. May it please the court. My name is Sean Reed. I represent the appellants, Steve Bystad and Kerry Heikkila, in this appeal. This is an appeal from the district court order granting summary judgment in favor of the city on the appellant's inverse condemnation claim. This is a case where my client's property interests were sacrificed so that the city could profit. The city entered into arrangement with Maurice's to develop an 11-story office tower slash parking garage. The city owns and operates the 5-story parking garage. In this case, and I'm sorry, I got a pop-up. Let me just get that off the screen. Sorry, new age we're in. Couldn't see the clock, now I can. The standard of review in this case, Your Honors, is de novo, and this court must determine whether there are any genuine issues of material fact involved in this case, and whether the district court erred as a matter of law.
Now, you're not claiming that the 11-story office building was an impermissible zoning issue, right?
I am not, Your Honor. No.
All right. So there was nothing about that building being built where it was built that is contrary to the zoning law, or
that is correct. That is correct.
So I think, and I read your brief and I read the respondent's brief, the main thing that the respondent argues is that this, whatever inconveniences your clients are experiencing, or just the inconveniences anyone would have living in an urban area and having an alley by their property. How do you respond to that? I mean, why is this different than anyone else who lives in downtown Duluth or downtown Minneapolis for that matter?
Sure, and thank you for that question, Your Honor. First of all, you have to analyze this case. Why this is different is because let me posit it, put it back in this way. If this matter were just a complete private enterprise that developed this building and constructed it where it is, we wouldn't have any argument at all. The fact of the matter is, though, we have a municipality, a government that actively engaged with a private corporation and developed and entered into partnership and ownership to construct this 11-story building right across the alleyway. Now, and while I'm talking about the alleyway, let me make it very clear. We're talking about roughly 25 feet away from my client's window, right? So that's what makes this different in this case from maybe other developments. In this case, we have the city of Duluth actively owning, operating, and developing this building. And that's why this makes it a taking. And so,
Mr. Reed, how does your argument square with this court's Chenoweth case?
The Chenoweth case, thank you, Your Honor. The Chenoweth case, I think, can be distinguished on the facts. In Chenoweth, if I recall correctly, the city in that case basically engaged in typical development, did TIF funding, things like that, maybe helped assist with a development plan, normal municipal things. What they didn't do in Chenoweth was engage in an active partnership slash ownership. And that's why this case is distinctly different than the Chenoweth case totally. In this case, the city of Duluth owns and operates a portion of this structure.
But Mr. Reed, didn't the district court then accept that part of the argument and did consider the taking as it relates to the parking ramp itself? And so isn't the issue that we're really dealt with Chenoweth is the rest of the building? And isn't the rest of the building no different factually than Chenoweth because the city doesn't own the rest of the building? And if I'm right, in fact, if we were to accept the district court's ruling in that regard, it's the rest of the building that actually physically blocks your client's window, if I understand correctly, because the parking ramp's a story below it, the top of the parking ramp.
Well, let me just address that last comment first, Judge. The parking ramp isn't below my client's window. Literally, if you stand at my client's windows, and I happen to have, and this was part of the addendum, this is the bank of windows, this is for the record on A2. If you were to look out those windows, you'd be staring directly into the parking ramp. So I just wanted to make sure that that is clear. Now, with the other issue I have with the district court is how in the world do you physically—
I'm sorry, before you go on, Mr. Reed, so a follow-up question on that, yes. If I may, and I'm sorry, Judge Schleter. If there were only a ramp and no office building above the ramp, if you can accept that hypothetical, could your client, for example, see the lift bridge? I'm looking at a photograph taken in the alley. It's Schmee's exhibit number 2, and it's a little bit unclear exactly the relative height of the top level of the parking ramp versus the height of the condo.
Okay, so the hypothetical question, Judge Johnson, if I followed, was if it was just the 5-story parking ramp, could my client see the Lake Spear Harbor, correct?
Sure.
Okay, and the answer to that question would be no, because again, if you were to open up the big bank of windows and look directly across without elevating your view or looking down, you're looking straight at parking ramp. You're looking into the parking ramp. And that's part of the issue in this case, because it leads to the loss of privacy and all that, which deals with the loss of quiet use and enjoyment. But okay. If I can get back to Judge Slider's question, and I apologize if I mispronounced your name, sir.
It's relatively close. That's good. Slater is actually it.
Thank you for that. The problem that I have with the district court's decision is the district court essentially tried to separate out the city's ownership and operation of the parking ramp without looking at the total. And to me, if you want to apply logic, common use, or whatever, there's no way you can separate the two out. The 5-story parking ramp is part of the 11-story building. Also, the city was engaged in not just developing the 5-story parking ramp, they were heavily engaged in the development of the building in its entirety. And the city was concerned and noted that this was going to be a concern. And I note this on in the footnote on the bottom of page 14, my note 4, where they're talking about the community. And they specifically mention the condo association, knowing that that's the neighbors that they're going to have to deal with. And the interesting thing on Roman numeral little I, they specifically note the view to canal from the city hall view shed. So it was important enough for the city to be considering that when they're talking about the planning, and it was important enough for them to mention it as it relates to City Hall. Certainly, it's an issue that's important to my clients.
So, Mr. Reed, I'm not fully yet clear on the distinction with Chenoweth, but if I understand it, really narrowed down to, because in Chenoweth too, there was the financing. It looked like they had the public entity had the ability to reject plans. So a lot of that sounds and. It seems like that's a fairly common process that cities might take part in today, but is your key point is that a part of that building is owned by the city, and that's probably the significant point you make in distinction with Chenoweth. So even though it's not the entire building, the parking ramp, it's all part of it, and therefore we should carve an exception to Chenoweth in terms of the taking, including the private part of the building.
I think that's fairly stated, Your Honor. Yes, the point I'm making is that the distinction is that the city owns the building, owns a portion of the building, and is in fact operating out of the building. And those are not the facts of Chenoweth. I'm not asking the court to come to the conclusion that, boy, if a city hall engages in TIF funding or financing or some other helping of development, I'm not asking the court to say that constitutes a taking. But when the
so to say it separately, I'm sorry I interrupted you. I just wanted to clarify. So if hypothetically the city had not owned the parking ramp, you would concede Chenoweth resolves this issue and there'd be no taking.
I believe that to be the case, because at that point in time, we're dealing with just a private entity. And what's the key in this case is the constitutional right that you can't take property without compensation. If the city is not an owner, they're not involved in that. They're just doing regular governmental type work, TIF financing, et cetera. But when they decide to actively engage and own and operate, they're taking, it's a take. And I don't think that's necessarily an exception carved out to Chenoweth. I just think it's different on all on the facts, totally. So so let me just pivot into the important thing using that. The Constitution is the starting point here. Obviously, my client, everyone has the constitutional right that private property cannot be taken without just compensation. That's noted in our Constitution, Article 1, Section 13. And so that ensures, that clause ensures that the government can't force some people to bear the public burdens. It should be borne by the public as a whole. But my clients in this case are bearing the price of this parking ramp, which is generating presumably profit for the city at the expense of my client.
Mr. Reed, I'm going to follow up a question Judge Hooten started out with, and the quote from Elavisos that I think really gets to that question in mind. Every landowner must continue to endure the level of inconvenience, discomfort, and loss of peace and quiet, which can be reasonably anticipated by any average member of a vibrant and progressive society. Now, I interpret the judge's order really honing in on that. Can you explain, perhaps legally or factually, why you think the district court got it wrong, given that it was properly zoned and this is apparently your client's building is the only residential building in this area? How did the court get it wrong? What would we look at to look at differently than that quote from Alavisos in whether there's a taking?
Sure. And I believe I quoted this probably the same quote in my brief as well. So
I think I saw it everywhere. That's part of my question is I suspect it's intended to be a bit of an objective standard, but when I look at all these cases and I see the dissents and concurring and one's a taking, one's a not, but yet we're still, and it's, I realize, de novo review. But I'm kind of honing in on what Judge Hooten asked. It's properly zoned, so the building itself is not improper. How possibly can it be an inconvenience that's unexpected such that it ought to be considered a taking?
Sure, and I appreciate that. And so it's true that my client's condominium unit, the building itself, is the only residential unit in this area. And I believe at some point in time, the city allowed developers to come in and develop that condominium, right? And so people such as my clients relied on that process, relied on the fact that the city allowed the condominiums to be constructed there, and they invested a significant amount of money in the condominium thinking this is what we're buying, this is what we're going to get. Some people rely on that for retirement purposes. And what happens later, after the city decides to engage in a partnership and ownership, they change the circumstances and basically allow this building to be built up right next to it. Now, I agree. I understand that we have to expect some of these types of developments to happen. I don't think I could call it just a mere inconvenience, because this changes my client's use of this property. But the distinction, again, I think comes back around to when the cities actively engage in the partnership and ownership and develop this, then they have to do what's fair. They have to do what's contemplated by the Constitution. They have to compensate the people who are affected. And so I think that's how you have to look at it And I'll try to address that question a little bit more deeply on my rebuttal, because I see my time is running out unless someone has a 45-second question for me.
So, Mr. Reed, what exactly is the remedy that you're seeking from this court on appeal?
The remedy I'm seeking on this court of appeal is to is for the court to determine that the district court erred, send it back. This is a taking, and I'd ask the court to determine that. Ultimately, I think what this court can and
Okay, you'd ask which court, excuse me, Mr. You'd ask which court to determine that it is a taking.
Well, I'd ask this court to determine that this is a taking, because this court can do that based off of the review standard. You do not have to defer to the court's decision if this is primarily a legal issue, which I think we all really agree that, that's the case. I think what we really need to do.
Did you file a cross motion for summary judgment?
No, I did not.
So, I understood that you were asking us to say there's a genuine issue of material fact and that the case should be reversed and remanded for a jury trial on the facts relevant to a takings claim.
Both, Your Honor. So it's my opinion that there is a genuine issue of material fact as to how the district court addressed the building issue. The court, again, as I was addressing with Judge Slider, the district court separates out the five stories for the parking ramp, and that leads to factual issues as to exhaust, exhaust fumes, exhaust fans, generators, etc. Relatively minor, this is a minor factual issues, but factual issues nonetheless. We also, in terms of the brief, argue that the district court erred as a matter of law. So under both. And ultimately, I think at the end of the day, if you read all these cases under the loss of quiet use and enjoyment and primarily the implied easement case, there's cases they're all over on the map. And specifically, the Castor case talks about a lack of a universal test because there isn't any. And I'd propose that we need to have something that helps guide people a little bit more. And I know that I'm way over my time, and I'll try to address that on rebuttal. Thank you.
And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you. All right, the respondent may proceed.
Thank you, and may it please the court. Elizabeth Sellers from the Duluth City Attorney's Office on behalf of the respondent, City of Duluth. This is an appeal from a grant of summary judgment. And so the question for this court, the reviewing court, is whether there are any genuine disputes of material fact and whether the district court correctly applied the law.
All right, can I just stop you? Because I just want to narrow the issues. Do you agree that with the argument that this is an issue of whether there's a government taking and there's no issue of fact regarding the issue that five stories of this building were government owned, and that a lot of the light pollution and the fumes and everything are coming from that garage area, the blocking of the view. Do you agree that that's the only issue? I mean, the issue is whether there has been a government taking is the only issue that's before us. There's no issue that if there is a taking, that it's due to the government facility, the government portion of the facility, or the government owned portion of the facility. Is that a fair statement?
Let me make sure that I understand, but I believe that I do agree. So the city owns the parking ramp portion of this structure that the appellants are objecting to. The parking ramp, consistent with city zoning, extends above ground facing the alley. It's in a mixed use downtown commercial district, commercial and residential. The zoning allows structures up to 15 stories, allows parking facing the alley on any story. That's exactly what we have here. There is an elevated parking ramp extending, I believe it is 5 stories facing the alley, directly opposite the appellant's alley facing residential condominium. And the city does own and operate that parking ramp. So as with any takings claim, the first question, the first part of the analysis is whether there is a protected property right. The appellants here take sort of two angles on that. They first discuss the loss of the view. And one of the judges this morning asked, does the parking ramp block the view? Yes, it does. But importantly, the condominium owners here, the appellants, have no property interest in a view all the way to the Lake Superior Harbor. The implied easement for light, air, and view extends only the width of the alley itself. There are no disputes of fact. The view over the alley itself is not blocked. There are no improper alley uses. There's no basis for a takings claim related to light, air, or view in this case.
And that alley pre-existed the construction of this office building and parking lot.
That's correct.
Correct.
The second theory that the appellants advance is a theory based on the airport zoning cases like Alavizos, having to do with a property interest in quiet enjoyment of their residential condominium unit. And there, the context matters. This is an issue that the Supreme Court, Minnesota Supreme Court, talked about in the airport zoning cases like Alavizos, where recognizing that a great deal of governmental work goes into planning and zoning. And so what sort of quiet enjoyment a property owner can or should expect depends on that context. And what we have here is a residential unit in a mixed-use downtown area. It's the only residential building on its block. That was true before the structure at issue here went up. It's still true today. The tenant has conceded that the character of the neighborhood has not changed. There are all sorts of conveniences associated with a prime downtown location, and there are corresponding inconveniences. So what we have here is basically the appellants looking to be compensated for a property right they never had. They're looking for the sort of quiet, peaceful environment they might find in the country or in the suburbs, but we're in downtown Duluth. So the fact that there are noises and lights, less privacy, that all is to be expected and comes with the area. Also, importantly, this is not a regulatory takings case. There's no claim that there was somehow some sort of change in zoning. Everything here is completely consistent with the downtown mixed use district that this condominium was in, is in. There simply hasn't been any change there.
All right, is your argument that under the facts of this case, there is no governmental taking because the noise and light pollution and the obstruction of the view is all something that you would ordinarily expect in an urban area or in the downtown area, correct?
That's exactly right.
Now, and if there was evidence that this noise or light pollution or obstruction was over and beyond what would be expected, would there be government taking in that situation?
I think there could
assuming,
be.
Assuming there was evidence that it was over, that it was in excess of what would ordinarily be expected in an urban area.
I think that there could be. And the case law tells us that the burden was on the appellants here, the petitioners, to explain what makes their situation different, to show what is it that is unexpected, that's so intrusive, that so particularly affects them, to make it rise to the level of taking. But we don't have that here because there are no facts that distinguish the properties at issue in this case from anything else in this downtown Duluth zoning district.
I'm guessing that there are a lot of condos in downtown Duluth that are near businesses, say office buildings and so on, but it seems like this condo unit really is the particular location, the fact that it's right behind a parking ramp with fumes and noise and light and so on makes it especially disadvantaged compared to other downtown condos. I mean, the district court made a statement that there are a lot of multi-level parking ramps in downtown Duluth. And I've been to downtown Duluth. I'm sure that there are numerous, but it's not that numerous. And I guess, and when they are built, it just, how, I mean, I'm wondering how often they really do put a very significant burden on one or a few particular dwellings that are so close and so much on the receiving end of all of the noxious things associated with parking ramps. So I guess I don't know. Do you have any reaction to that observation?
Sure. And there, as is in the record, there are other elevated alley facing parking ramps throughout Duluth. I am not prepared to say today how many or how many are across from residential units, but when the petitioners here bought, that is the appellants bought the condominium unit, they knew they were buying an alley facing unit. They could observe it's in a mixed use zoning district. It allows for tall buildings, allows for elevated parking ramps. So the fact that the property across the alley from their unit was underdeveloped at the time they bought it does not somehow vest property rights in a quiet environment with an unobstructed view.
Well, but I mean, that statement could be made of practically any property owner. I mean, somebody who owns vacant land, say near the Mall of America, I mean, they might expect further development, and someday the government might want to put a street, maybe a four-lane highway through my property. But that expectation doesn't mean that they get no compensation. There's no taking, merely because the government may do that, but it means there is a taking of a property interest that requires just compensation. Why is it different here?
If there is a taking of a property interest, but so far there is no identified interest, no identified property interest that can be subject of the taking.
What about the right to quiet enjoyment and peaceful possession? Isn't that a recognized property interest?
And that's where the language from the Elevizos case is directly on point, that this property is in a downtown commercial mixed use area. It has all the conveniences, all of the downtown attractions, the restaurants, the walking distance to work. And yes, parking comes along with that. And there was every reason that an owner of a residential unit in a mixed use area like that can and should expect that an underdeveloped surface ramp across the alley won't remain that way.
Ms. Sellers, maybe to follow up Judge Johnson's question, how would you distinguish that from the result of the Alavizos case? It would seem reasonable that residents near an airport might anticipate a rerouting of the flight patterns. But nevertheless, the court remanded, as I understand, for a fact-finding issue on essentially the valuation of the taking. That seems to follow up with Judge Johnson's question. Yes, you're in the airport, a flight changes. The court easily could have said exactly what you're saying. Well, you're near an airport. You should expect that that's what will happen. Why wouldn't we apply that same? And maybe that is an issue of diminution of value that a jury could determine taking that into account.
A few reactions, if I may. First of all, there's some suggestion in later case law that the airport cases are sui generis, that there's something different about airports. Second of all, the houses at issue, a number of the Alavizos plaintiffs were owners of single unit residential houses in single unit residential zoning districts. And the character of the airport had so changed over the decades that they were no longer, the property owners were no longer enjoying the sort of property rights that they expected under the zoning of their property. This is a very, very different situation here. We're in the midst of a downtown commercial mixed-use zoning district here. When the property owners here, the appellants, bought their condo, it was the only residential unit on their block. There is no change in the character. That's in the record. That's from the deposition transcripts that I believe it was the tenant who testified that the character of the block here, the neighborhood, is the same since the construction of the office headquarters in the parking ramp as it was before.
Ms. Sellers, going back to Ella Vissos, Judge Slater earlier quoted that key language. Later in the same paragraph, there's a statement saying this will not give relief to the unusually sensitive person because due to decreased desirability in the general marketplace. Well, let's see. It has to do with discomfort to the individual. But I think what it's saying is, the earlier quote talks about the level of inconvenience, discomfort, loss of peace and quiet, which can be reasonably anticipated by an average member of society. And then the second quote has to do with the unusually sensitive person. So are you effectively saying that the owners and occupants of this condo are unusually sensitive to the environment around the condo?
That may be, but I think the more important issue is that the inconveniences of which they complain are anything that any average member of the society can reasonably expect.
See, I'm thinking, and just to illustrate, I'm thinking that if I had chosen at random, say, 20 different downtown condos in Duluth a decade or two ago, I'm guessing 19 of them would still be equally habitable. But this one in particular, I would want to sell because that has, the experience of living there seems to have changed dramatically with the construction of that parking ramp. And what I had previously found to be reasonable and appropriate for myself, I would suddenly decide is no longer so. And it's because I think to myself, I'm one of the few people who is unlucky enough to be right next to this rather large city-owned parking ramp, and that puts me in a different situation than the vast majority of other downtown condo unit owners. Now, you know Duluth better than I do, so perhaps you could tell me why my perceptions would be incorrect.
First of all, because it is an alley-facing condominium, and most alleys here in downtown Duluth are lined on both sides with tall brick buildings. And so the fact that this did not have a tall brick building on the opposite side or a parking ramp on the opposite side, that made it unusual before Maurice's headquarters went up. What's there now is what's typical for downtown Duluth.
Typical height, but what about the nature of the operation? It's a parking ramp, not an office building, not a warehouse building. Well, I don't know. There's a lot of activity there, which is basically vehicles driving with exhaust, with their headlights. I mean, that's different from any other building, correct?
There are elevated downtown parking ramps throughout downtown Duluth. What's there now is what's typical.
I have one more question, if the presiding judge will allow, which is, so you recognize, I think, that there is, if there are genuine issues of material fact, then there is a right to a jury trial, correct?
Correct.
So what would be the factual, let's say there had been no motion for summary judgment, so the district court proceeded straight to trial. I mean, what would be the factual issues that would be submitted to the jury as opposed to the issues that would be decided by the district court in a case like this?
I believe that issues of damages would go to a finder of fact. We're not there in this case. We've bifurcated, first of all, whether as a matter of law, constitutional taking occurred. It's a challenging question to answer because the parties agree on the facts. There are no material disputes of fact. We agree as to ownership of the parking garage that's city owned. We agree as to the facts on the alleged interferences. There's increased noise, increased light, and loss of view. So the next question is, what are the inferences and what are the conclusions to be drawn from those facts? And those present questions of law for the court. So it's our view that this summary judgment was the proper vehicle for deciding this case. It remains so. I have not heard this morning, nor have I seen in the briefing, anything that would raise a material issue of fact that would need to go to a jury.
I appreciate your answer. I mean, I'm looking at the later Elavizos opinion from 1982, where the Supreme Court says there's a two-step test for a constitutional taking in these unique airport noise cases. First, does the noise constitute a substantial invasion? And second, does such invasion result in a measurable diminution of market value? And I, frankly, I'm searching myself to determine whether those entire questions are submitted to the jury potentially, or whether there are sort of components of those issues, you know, sub-issues that are presented to the jury. And I wanted to get your point of view because you work for a city, so I'm sure you have experience and expertise in these matters. So I appreciate that. Thank you. And yeah. If you have any other further comment on that, I'd be interested.
Yes, I believe that before reaching those two questions, the initial question needs to be whether there was interference with a cognizable property interest. And that's what we're missing in this case. So with all respect, I believe that those two questions, Judge, that you just asked, we don't even get there in this case because there isn't interference with a cognizable property right.
But we do use the Elavizos analysis, which allows, I mean, it allows recognition of a property right, even if there's no physical invasion to the homeowner's property, right? It may in some circumstance recognize a property right in the quiet enjoyment, peaceful possession, which could be interfered with or taken by things such as noise, as well as fumes, vibrations, and so on.
Right. And I submit that the construction of a city-owned parking ramp, completely consistent with the zoning code, cannot give rise to a takings claim.
Thank you for answering my questions.
Judge Hooten, you're muted. Sorry.
How would you distinguish this case from the airport cases?
A few different ways, including that the character of the neighborhood here is completely unchanged before and after the construction of the building and the property, the parking ramp. So unlike the airport noise cases where the airport grew over time, the flight patterns changed, they increasingly interfered with residentially zoned areas. This has at all relevant times been a mixed use commercial downtown area. All of the conveniences that come with living downtown are still there today. The petitioners here had an additional benefit for the few years before construction of the ramp and the office headquarters here in that they enjoyed a relatively quiet block with an amazing view. That they now have what anybody else in downtown Duluth can expect doesn't constitute a takings. There was no interference with the property right. A takings claim can't compensate them for rights they never had.
All right, thank you. Any other questions?
Judge Hooten, if you one time for one, please, I'll ask.
No, you may proceed.
And Ms. Sellers, this kind of ties to an answer that Judge Hooten asked you at the beginning, but also your answer right to the end, I think, to Judge Johnson's question. And if I understand your main argument is you're suggesting our court need not do a Chenoweth type of analysis, because your point being is, if I understand correctly, even if the entire building was owned by the city, there is no taking for the reasons you argued. Am I correct about that?
On the record in this case, I believe that's correct. I don't understand the appellants and petitioners to be raising any claims of a taking based on facts that are unique to other portions of that is non-city owned portions of the building here.
And is then that part due to what I understand the parties have stipulated is that the parking ramp anyway blocks the view. So whether the rest of it additionally blocks it or doesn't add or detract, your point being it's still not a taking, distinguishing it from, for instance, the airport case.
Right. And where that where my answer would change is if, for example, the appellants would be arguing a taking based on loss of privacy because office workers can see in, or something. If at some point in the case there were allegations about maybe venting from the office portion affecting the air quality. So to the extent that the appellants are claiming a taking based on facts not related to the parking facility, then the Chenoweth analysis is important. And it is only the government-owned, the city-owned parking ramp that could possibly give rise to a takings claim.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, Mr. Reed, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, and again, can everyone hear me all right?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Let me just start off by maybe just addressing AL Bezos, and let me distinguish the current case from that. And the way I look at AL Bezos compared to the current situation is that the current situation is worse. In the airport zoning cases, it's a fleeting problem. And I agree, I used to live down there. I saw airplanes approach and fly over my house all the time, but that's momentary. And it changes from time to time. Air traffic patterns change, amount of flights change. In this case, that will never change. The way it stands on the ground right now is how it's going to exist. My clients, their tenant, are forever going to experience, I'm going to use Ms. Sellers' phrase from her brief, I found it quite artful, I think it was perpetual twilight. She described what my client's condominium is like now because of the blocking of the sun. So we distinguish ourselves from AL Bezos by saying it's worse. And if I may, the court was discussing whether or not drawing a distinction in AL Bezos versus the unusually sensitive person versus the average reasonable person. And I would posit to the court that what my clients have to endure now on a daily basis till the end of time, until that building goes down, that's not someone that's being unusually sensitive.
Well, can I ask you this? I mean, the primary reason given for distinguishing this case from the airport cases, and in the airport cases, there was a significant change in the whole character of the neighborhood and the airport, which made it a different situation than in this case, where it's just the downtown area and you expect the development that took place would take place in a downtown area. Is that, I mean, how do you respond to that distinction?
Your Honor's technology, I don't know if that was on my end or your end.
I think it was probably your end, and we're going to add 30 seconds to the clock. We did stop it, but I think you lost about 30 seconds. So
I appreciate that. And I think,
did you hear my question?
You froze up and then I lost you, so I don't think I caught the whole question.
Okay. Well, I mean, Ms. Sellers, in response to an earlier question I had, said the main distinguishing feature, one of the main distinguishing features between this case and the airport cases is that in the airport cases, there was a complete change of the neighborhood what was probably a more explosive growth of the airport, which made it totally different than when the people initially bought their property, and that's distinguishable from this case where you just have a building in downtown and downtown develops, as everyone knows, and that this is a different expectation when you buy downtown. How do you respond to that? I mean, how should we approach that distinction? Well,
first of all, I respectfully disagree that that the neighborhoods in the airport cases changed more drastically than that in this case. And I speak from my own experience when I was down there. There can be residential neighborhoods down there that really don't see any drastic changes at all, except for the fact that a plane is flying overhead now. Yes, an airport may expand farther away, but it's the difference is it's not directly across from your window. We're talking a development that happened 25 feet away. So that I think the change in this case is much more drastic than the parties experienced in the airport case. Now, I'm sure there's some airport property owners that would disagree with me on that, but I'm drawing the distinction between, and maybe it's proximity. Maybe it's proximity is the way to look at it. In this case, the change physically happened less than around 20 feet away from my client's property. But at any rate, I think the two-part test that AL Bezos, I think it's both in AL Bezos 1 and 2, applies. And we have to ask ourselves whether or not there's a substantial invasion of a property right such that they're deprived the practical enjoyment of that property. And then there's the diminution of market value, which we don't have to get to today, but clearly that's the case here. When they bought the condo, the noise was down at the alley level or the street level. What the construction of the parking ramp effectively did was take everything that was happening at street level, rise it up five stories and put it directly across from the condominium. So now that the noise just goes directly into the client's condo, there is complete lack of privacy. And that's why they had to put this film up over the windows. This has drastically changed their use. And I think the AL Bezos test applies. And I see that I'm out of time.
Any other questions?
If I do have one to Judge Hooten, please. Mr. Reed, I wanted to follow up Ms. Sellers' answer to Judge Johnson's questions regarding what would happen on remand, which is what you're asking for. And I think if I understand her point, the issue as a matter of law doesn't get to the two-part test you just referenced in El Azizos, meaning is there a property right? And yet the first part of that test before you even get to diminution seems to ask the questions of whether one has an interference. Do you agree with that analysis? And does that mean if we were to remand, a jury could still answer no to the first question and your client is done at that point and not even get to diminution even at a jury trial?
Yeah, I guess the way I look at this, it'd be kind of like a special verdict form that would be provided to the jury. And one of the questions would be, was there a substantial invasion of a property right? I think the evidence would have to be presented to the jury to make a determination whether or not the noise level, the exhaust fumes, the loss of privacy all rise to the level such that they could advance to the next question on the special verdict form. If they answered no, then we're done, just like in any other type of jury trial. You don't, you remember the parenthetical in all special verdict forms. If your answer to this question is no, you're done. If its answer is yes, please proceed to question number 3 or 4, whatever. So I think it's a question of providing the jury with the proper special verdict forms, and they'd have to address, in my opinion, whether or not factually these are substantial invasions.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. We will take the matter under advisement. It's been well argued and briefed, and we thank you for your assistance in trying to resolve this matter. Thank you.
Thank you so much.